Welcome to the second half of potentially the most important season in the Jerry DePoto era of the Seattle Mariners. Welcome back to the Chaos Ball Podcast, everyone. Thanks for tapping in. We're back on Friday. The second half's starting today. It's probably already started for some teams as you're listening to this, but it's going to be a short and sweet episode. Last week was long because it was the Name and Dudes episode, and then we had the All-Star break, so some baseball has happened between the last pod and this one, and I will talk about it because they lost 3 of 4 to the Angels going into the break, and I was at all three of those losses in person. It was great, but we'll talk about that in a second. First off, as we head into the second half of the year, I do really think this is probably the most important second half that the team has had in quite a while. Maybe not as important as 2022 to break the drought, but now it's put up time for the ownership, and it's squeaky bum time for the coaching staff and Jerry DePoto and the players. I think they're feeling the pressure from the fan base to win the division and at the very least make the playoffs after a disappointing missing of the playoffs last year. And Jerry DePoto has already come out this week and tempered everyone's expectations with a all-time Jerry DePoto quote. It might be the greatest Jerry DePoto quote of all time. And he's had some really good Jerry DePotos over the year. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably do know what I mean by Jerry DePotos. It's not anything I can really express into words. I think you just hear something and it's like, that is something he totally would say. It's everything that comes out of his mouth. He is such a, he's honestly maybe the most perfect mouthpiece for John Stanton and the ownership group that they've ever had. I think the ownership group has got to be really happy with most of the things he said. The biggest misstep was the 54% quote, and I still think that was top five Jerry DePoto quotes ever. Just not only for content, it was so Jerry coded. But he came out on Seattle radio a couple days ago and said this about the trade deadline and what their potential plan is for said trade deadline. He said, quote, "We are open to doing something that has the potential to be dynamic. Don't know if that's going to be available. Right now it's not. And this is as late as we've ever gone into a deadline where I can honestly say it's not." End quote. That is the president of baseball operations of the Seattle Mariners basically telling the fans, hey, players are costing too much right now. And Mark Canha, welcome to the Seattle Mariners. You are the reinforcements, Mark. I talked about Mark Canha last week and how it would be the perfect Jerry DePoto acquisition. And honestly, it seems inevitable at this point. After that quote, and that quote told me more about where the ownership group is still at in the cheapness than where Jerry DePoto and his regime is at, because obviously they've gotten very creative with the ways they've attempted to build a winning roster, and they've built a pretty damn good team that is just wanting for investment from the ownership group to take big swings on guys who could really catapult this probably pretty good 86 to 90 win team, which will get you in the playoffs a lot of the time, sure. But maybe with a little bit more buy-in from this ownership group, I've talked about this a lot, it can give you just a bigger ceiling and of like 95 wins, maybe raise your floor and give you a better range of outcomes and a better baseline. Because the stuff goes wrong in the second half for this Mariners team, and they don't, and their ceiling is like a 90 win team, and stuff goes awry, the margin of error is so low. Is my point always with how they've decided to build this team. But that quote was insane. That quote was insane because every single move / player acquisition, whatever you do to your team, does have the potential to be dynamic. It's hilarious. I mean, like, what, the potential to be dynamic? That is saying so many words that mean absolutely nothing to me. Calling up Darren McCaughan the past few years has always had the potential to be dynamic in my mind. Listen, taking a buy low offer on Luis Urias definitely had the potential to be dynamic. Now, it didn't turn out to be dynamic, but potentially it could have been dynamic. I think this is my new favorite word to describe any and every move that the Seattle Mariners makes. I mean, Mark Canna, he potentially could be very dynamic for this team, is what I'm saying. But that quote did not go over well with the fans on Twitter, as most of his quotes don't do. There's little patience on Twitter at this point. There's still plenty of people, surprisingly, in some in my mentions, but mostly in other bigger accounts mentions that are like, hey, players are just too expensive. Like, Luis Robert is going to be just too expensive. And I'm like, there is no such thing as too expensive in my mind when you're dealing with guys not in the major leagues. And, you know, a lot of people probably would very much disagree with me on the internet when I say that. But too expensive is not an excuse to not try to improve your team. That's just the circumstances you found yourself in. And it's still going to be a really interesting trade deadline for that reason. We still only really know a couple teams that are actually selling. I think the Rays and the Blue Jays are the two biggest wild cards here, because Luis Robert and Garrett Crochet, I talked about last week, and even Eric Fetty, like the White Sox, if they are with the Marlins as one of like the only teams that are actually selling good players, like, I guess, like, the Rockies, again, are really bad. They don't have anyone that good. If the White Sox find themselves with the Marlins as, like, the two teams that people are calling all the time for trades, they could get an absolute haul for Luis Robert and Garrett Crochet and Eric Fetty because of the scarcity in the trade market. And if the Rays and the Blue Jays decide to trade Isaac Paredes, Randy Rosarena, Yandy Diaz, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, Jimmy Garcia, and I called him Jimmy last week. I still kind of want to call him that, but his name is Jimmy Garcia. If they decide to sell, and that floods the market with a lot of talent, and then I think, theoretically, the price would go down for a guy like Luis Robert, because there's other options available to teams, and that puts more pressure on the White Sox to try to sell him. I still think that it's not going to take an absolute insane haul to get Luis Robert off the White Sox. I think the White Sox have more pressure to sell him and get anything out of him right now than other teams have to buy. And there's so much pressure, like, for a team like the Mariners, there's a lot of pressure for them to buy a guy like Luis Robert. And I've talked about this, but I think there's even more pressure on the White Sox. Keeping him makes no sense. Luis Robert, if he's on the White Sox in August, that is a failure, because especially with a guy like that, he could just get hurt. This is their best opportunity to get the absolute most they possibly could for Luis Robert. And it would be malpractice if they didn't trade him at this year's deadline, I think. So I think there's that aspect. I think teams know that. And I think there's obviously they can request somewhat of a king's ransom, and some teams will pony up to pay it, but it's not like the Mariners calling the White Sox. It's not like the Mariners have no leverage in that situation. There's plenty of leverage to move off a guy like Luis Robert. So it's like trading with the Rays or the Jays would be a little bit different. They're in different team circumstances. If they decide to sell Vladdy, the Jays, I think they could probably ask for whatever you want, and they could entertain just holding on to him. They definitely have that option. But the White Sox are in a circumstance where they need to sell him. They really do. So we'll see. That comment from Jerry did not encourage me, but nothing he really does encourages me greatly. So we'll see. I still think on July 19th, we won't know for another 8-9 days who's actually going to be selling. I talked about this so much last week. There's so much mediocrity. There's so much muddying of the trade waters, and really right now it's the White Sox and the Marlins that are probably receiving the most preliminary calls. Like, hey, what's going on here? John Morosi thinks the Mariners and Rays will trade again because that's what they've done in the past. He tweeted out the most ridiculous tweet I've seen from a reporter during this season. He was like, the Mariners and Rays, they haven't actually talked about trades at all this year yet, but they could potentially talk trades soon. No reporting was done in that tweet. He just wanted to tweet. He seemed bored. And he just yap. He is public enemy number one on Mariners Twitter, and it's hilarious. But I think besides Mark Canna, I think Jazz Chisholm fits the potentially dynamic mold that Jerry DePoto is talking about. And I think fans are never going to be happy no matter what you do. Fans weren't happy with the amount they gave up for Luis Castillo, and that has worked out swimmingly. I've said many times, if Noelvi Marte becomes a Hall of Famer, I still think that trade looks great for Jerry DePoto and the Mariners. Look at what Luis Castillo has done for this baseball team. I think Jazz Chisholm would cost less than a guy like Luis Robert or obviously a guy like Vladdy. It would be on the flip side where fans don't actually think he's good. And I don't disagree with his criticisms, but Jazz Chisholm is, if there's a player that's been potentially dynamic for five straight years, it's Jazz Chisholm. He has the potential to be super dynamic. And I think that is genuinely a realistic thing that I could see happen. I think he's been playing center field. They've moved him back to second base recently. He can play second base. I think you could probably get away with putting him in the corners at this point. It doesn't quite replace Mitch Haniger because he's a left-handed hitting second baseman / outfielder. But when I thought of potentially dynamic, Jazz Chisholm somewhat fits that mold. And they might as well throw in Tanner Scott as well. So Mark Canna, Jazz Chisholm, welcome to the Seattle Mariners. Potentially dynamic for this team in the second half. The Astros are one game behind the Mariners now, which is cool. That's great. Fangraphs has the Astros actually with the higher odds to both make the playoffs and win the division by very slim margins. The Astros have according to Fangraphs, have a 46.8% chance to win the division. The Mariners a 45.5. And to make the playoffs, the Mariners are at 55.9, and the Astros are at 58. So Fangraphs thinks the Astros are maybe a little bit better than the Mariners, but I think this is likely going to be, like the past couple years have been, a very tight race between at least two teams. It's the Mariners or the Mariners, Astros, and then, I mean, the Rangers are hanging around. They're five back right now. They're not out of it by any stretch. And I dubbed them potentially the most interesting team at the trade deadline this year because they have all the incentives to buy and no incentive to sell anything at this current moment in their franchise history. So we'll see what happens. It's just such a slop division. Like, their projected win-loss for the Astros and Mariners is roughly 85 and 77 for both of these teams, which is awful, which is just so bad to win a division like that. But listen, the Astros will try to buy. The one thing the Astros don't have that the Mariners do is farm system capital right now heading into the trade deadline. So there's at least that. Is Jerry going to use it? He better. I swear to God, if he does not, I'm going to be very mad if it's just like Mark Canna at the deadline for this team. But what else is going on? The Mariners, as I talked about, 3 of 4. They lost 3 of 4 to the Angels in Anaheim heading into the break. And this is my only chance to really see the Mariners at all during the course of the season is either Dodger Stadium, which is very expensive and farther for me than Angel Stadium, San Diego, which they only are there twice a year, which makes it tough to get down there, and it's kind of expensive. And then, yeah, Anaheim, it's perfect. It's the closest stadium to me. It's dirt cheap, and they're down here, what, 8 times a year now? 7 times a year? So I went to 3 of 4 of those games. I missed the game on Thursday where they won, what, 11-1? And then I proceeded to go to Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I was so excited. Weather was great. Tickets are cheap. Hadn't watched live baseball all year. Hadn't seen my Mariners in person all year. And then they proceeded to play three of maybe the worst games I've ever seen live in my entire life. It was awful. I still had a good time going to these games. I love watching baseball live. Even if the Mariners lose, I'm no stranger to going to a game and watching them lose. But the manner in which they lost these games, it was just an absolutely unserious way to lose three straight baseball games to a not good baseball team. The Angels aren't, like, awful. They're not the White Sox. They're not the Rockies. But they're not that much better than those teams. They have a couple good players. They're 41-55. They're going to be a 73-win team. Like, that's really a bad team. And the Mariners mopped them up on Thursday. The one game I choose not to go to against a pitcher who I don't even think was real. And then they pitched two more guys after that, Tyler Anderson and Jose Soriano, who were more serious for sure. And then they threw, who was it? Who almost threw a no-hitter on Sunday? I was about to say Sam Carlson, but that was a former Mariners prospect. I'm forgetting now because I've blocked these games out of my memory. Carson Fulmer, that's who it was. Carson Fulmer threw 4 2/3 innings of 7-strikeout-1-walk-0-hit baseball, which was sweet. But three straight games losing by one run. Friday's was a backbreaker to open my series of Friday, Saturday, Sunday seeing this baseball game. Brian Wu was not good. I saw Brian Wu down here last year, and I think it was maybe his best start of the year. And he just looked visibly rusty. I was watching some of the videos on Twitter while I was at the game, just kind of getting a sense of what he looked like on TV on the mound, and he looked worse in person, I gotta tell you. Like, body language-wise, he clearly just wasn't having it. Rust was visibly there. The bullpen was nails, though. The bullpen was great, and the Mariners finally got to Tyler Anderson, and they took the lead, and it just looked like, oh, okay, things are happening. And this was after Julio. He hit a home run the first inning. That was just a rocket to right field. Willie Calhoun hit a home run earlier in the game. Then Cal hit another bomb from the right side of the plate. And we head into the late innings. I'm just pacing around the concourse, ready to leave this game whenever it was going to end. We end up going to the 10th. I'm standing there. Mitch Garver comes through, gets an RBI double in the top of the 10th. And I'm like, okay, this is great. Austin Voth comes in. And it's great. I'm like, oh, Austin Voth. He's been awesome this year. Who you got up first? Oh, it's Willie Calhoun. And Austin Voth throws precisely two pitches. And the second that the crack of the bat happened off Willie Calhoun, I turned around and I walked down the concourse to the parking lot. I didn't see the ball land. Willie Calhoun hit the piss out of that ball. I watched it back when I got home because I genuinely did not see it land. He floated in a curveball in there. I saw the immediate launch angle off the bat from the concourse, and I turned around and was out of there, and then I heard the crowd go crazy. That was brutal. That was very tough, and I was like, oh, this weekend's going to not go very well, and I was correct. I go back the next day on Saturday. And this one was just a pitcher's duel. I saw George Kirby throw just a really solid start, very good Kirby start that most serious baseball organizations would win. Julio, again, continued to be hot. They had a really great first inning. Really great first inning. They got their top of the lineup, which is on top of Jose Soriano. They got to him early. They scored one run, and then they didn't score for the rest of the game. I could not believe it. I was just numb watching this game a little bit. I was there with some friends, so I was a little bit distracted too, but the pitching was great, and the offense scored one run against Jose Soriano, Ben Joyce, Luis Garcia, and Carlos Estevez. And those are all pretty solid pitchers, I'll say it. You know, I saw Ben Joyce, he threw 104 mile an hour pitch, which is stupid. But this one, I was just numb to it. I've seen this all too many times. George Kirby goes deep into a game, only gives up one run. One earned run, two runs. But Luke Raley's throwing error caused Joe Adell's single in the second for two guys to score. And that was the difference in the ball game, which is upsetting. I've seen this one before, all too many times. And they score one run in nine innings against a very inferior team and lose 2-1. And George Kirby gets the loss on that game after going six innings of seven strikeouts, one earned run baseball. And then, you know what was really crazy is going into Sunday, I had a shred of optimism going into the game. I was like, oh, it's an afternoon game. I'm going to wear my Sunday cream jersey. Logan Gilbert's pitching. He's about to head to the All-Star game and not pitch, which is great. And I was just so confident in Logan Gilbert. And he delivered. Logan Gilbert went seven innings, gave up two hits, and struck out nine guys. But Carson Fulmer, as I've mentioned earlier, went 4 2/3 innings of no-hit baseball with seven strikeouts. I think his career high in strikeouts is eight, and that came in like 2018. Carson Fulmer is, by all accounts, in 2024, not a major league quality starting pitcher. Maybe a bullpen guy. Maybe just an innings eater. The Mariners couldn't touch him at all. It was strikeouts. It was pop-ups. There was nothing they could do against Carson Fulmer. And then finally, J.P. Crawford in the sixth inning hits a rocket and homers. And then Victor Robles in the seventh inning, he conjures up a little chaos run. He got on base. He stole... He stole third. Logan Hoppy throwing error to that stolen base on third, and bada bing, bada boom, it's 2-0 heading into the eighth inning. And then Joe Adell hits a three-run home run, and I should have just left. Austin Voth came in. I had a bad feeling in my stomach. Stanek came in first, I should say, and was terrible. He looked like Ryan Stanek, but he didn't actually get anyone out. Usually he looks like Ryan Stanek and gets out of the inning. And then Austin Voth comes in, serves up an absolute meatball to Joe Adell. Three-run home run. They take the lead in the eighth. I should have just walked out right then and there. I was on the concourse, similar to Friday, just standing there. And I should have just walked out because they then were just limp in the top of the ninth. They just rolled over and died for three straight games in Anaheim. They just said, yeah, here, Angels, just kill us. Right here, stab me. Stab me in the throat, please. That's what happened. And you couldn't ask for a worse weekend heading into the All-Star break than that, for myself, and for the Seattle Mariners on the field. The discourse after this game was awful. Not only, obviously, did they lose three straight to the Angels, but Logan Gilbert going into the, after the seventh inning, he's cruising. He's got 87 pitches. There's an All-Star break coming up. He's not going to pitch in it. He's a professional baseball pitcher. He's a professional man. He is a big boy. He has thrown 87 more pitches in his life. And usually, when people are panning Scott Service decisions, particularly with the bullpen or substitutions, people do that no matter what on Twitter, whether it was a good decision in hindsight or not. Rarely are there arguments in good faith being made about this on Twitter, which makes sense. It's usually retroactive, like, oh, we shouldn't have done this. It's like, well, that's just not how baseball works sometimes. At the game, I was so surprised he took Logan Gilbert out. The velo wasn't down. He was cruising. He was at 87 pitches. The team had finally taken the lead. And theoretically, you go to the bullpen and close it out. But no, 87 pitches, I'm throwing him out there. And you just go hitter by hitter. He allows a base runner, then you yoink him. He was nails. He probably would have finished the eighth inning. I mean, maybe You put him out, even you put him out there and he gives up the lead, whatever, you still put him out there. 87 pitches going into the All-Star break. I'm not one to pan managerial decisions because there's so much that goes into it. I think it's quite a hard job, and I think managers like Scott Servais, ones that were longer tenure, generally make pretty decent decisions most of the time. Some of them are not good. This one was really not good. In the moment, I didn't think this one was good. It takes a lot for me to shit on Scott Servais on this podcast, and I'm never really praising Scott Servais. I'm quite lukewarm with managers in baseball, but that was an awful decision. But it felt like there was a certain predetermined outcome that the Mariners were going to lose this game no matter what Scott Servais did. I think that's a caveat that no one really recognizes on Mariners Twitter. And it's that there's a divine power guiding the Seattle Mariners into the weirdest, funniest, wackiest, and oftentimes most gut-wrenching baseball outcomes possible. I don't think Scott Servais can influence this very much. I don't think the players can influence it very much. I don't think me, a fan attending the game, can influence it at all. The higher power determining the outcome of the Seattle Mariners this past weekend in Anaheim said pain. They said there will be nothing but pain for that team. And that's it. I couldn't believe I skipped the game on Thursday because I was like, no, I'll go to the next three. And they lose three straight games by a combined three runs. Three just gut punches. Austin Voth was my sworn enemy this weekend. Two absolutely back-breaking home runs given up by him. Really tough series for him. More continued suffering for the offense. It could be the best possible thing in the long term of this year for the offense to come out of the break and still look terrible. Because then I think there's genuinely no excuse for this front office to not upgrade. At every position, they could feasibly upgrade every single offensive position. Now, how many of those players will be available? I don't know. But I'm saying just if there was a player available at each position, every position could be upgraded. The ones they won't, catcher, I don't think they'll trade for a catcher now that Mitch Garver's hitting backup or playing backup. I don't think they're going to trade for a catcher. Obviously, Cal is the number one guy. Shortstop, don't think they'd trade for a shortstop. I think JP's just the guy. And then the center field, they're not going to replace Julio in center field. Julio is like obviously the number one guy that just needs to be better. And he looked much better the past week before the All-Star break. I will say that. That was the encouraging thing from what I saw in the series is that I think he's still just going to strike out a decent amount and whiff, but he looks better. And the outcomes were way better for him the past couple weeks, bat at ball wise. So there's that. But every other position, corner outfield, second base, third base, first base, some bullpen even, all of that could be upgraded. So no excuse for this team going into the break. I think I'm going to call it in a couple minutes here, short and sweet podcast just before the second half begins, and I'll be back next week. A couple things I did want to say that I didn't get to last week because it was the Naming Dudes episode, and it went pretty long. Logan Evans and a Logan Evans update in terms of if we're talking upgrades at the deadline, there's also internal reinforcements in Logan Evans and like Tyler Locklear for also. We'll talk about him next week. But Logan Evans is one of those like potential bullpen internal reinforcements. He's back in the rotation. I don't know exactly what this means for him long term, but it was a couple weeks ago, they made this decision. Basically, they didn't see his stuff really improve a whole lot after going to the pen, and that's obviously like what you're looking for when you move a guy to the bullpen. You're looking for them to just throw harder and their stuff to play up a little bit, and that didn't happen. His stuff is already great, but they just didn't see the improvements or the settling into a bullpen role that they wanted, so he's back in the rotation. I don't know if that really rules out him being a bullpen call-up this year at some point. I don't know if it rules it out at all, but that's something as an update. Maybe he will actually end up getting traded after all at the deadline when we all thought he was going to be a bullpen addition, but we'll see. Then the other minor league update is Harry Ford appears to be learning left field. And that is not surprising. I think every time Harry Ford has come up on this podcast discussing his future, and like all prospect knowers out there, the real prospect people will always say, like, he's been working on his catching, but the idea of Harry Ford is he's looked great at the plate. Power, speed, athleticism. The catcher ability was always a question mark, but the fact that he's so athletic gives him the opportunity to do what he's doing now and learn left field. The Mariners have learned putting him in left field. This could be for the future on the team and or just positional flexibility to trade. You know, I think it works both ways, and it works for him as well to give him an outlet if catching truly doesn't come along for him. And I think that's a fairly significant moment in his development as a prospect. I think this moment, a lot of people could see happening at some point down the line. I think there was talk of him either moving to the corners or second base just because he's athletic. I don't know if he's going to play shortstop or center field, but he's athletic enough to probably be a decent corner outfielder with a great bat. So that's a pretty big development. And those are my little cheeky little prospect updates, but I'm going to call it here. Short and sweet. I'll be back next week. Before I sign off, the Mariners play the Astros today. As you listen to this, if you're listening to this on Friday, they play the Astros. As I mentioned, the Astros are one game back of your Seattle Mariners, and this is a massive series. A massive series. We're getting Luis Castillo, George Kirby, and Brian Wu. It would have been Logan Gilbert, but Scott mentioned they want to have less time in between Brian Wu's starts, I think just to really get him up to speed. So Castillo, Kirby, Wu at home versus the Astros. The Mariners will see Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez, and Renel Blanco, which is a great lineup for them. Hunter Brown's been awesome the past month and change for them. Framber's been solid. Renel Blanco's had a great year. And then the Angels come to town, and they need to kick their ass as retribution. And then they get the White Sox. So 9 games coming out of the break. You got 6 against the Angels and the White Sox, but 3 against the Astros this weekend. Pivotal. Come Monday, the Astros could be 2 games up in the division on the Seattle Mariners, which is a scary, scary thing to think about. But this is a crucial series. It's a, I guess for lack of a better term, it's a tone setter series to start the second half against the Astros. They win this series, then they get a little respite with the Angels and White Sox, and they take it from there. Let's just hope that's what they do. But I'll be back before the White Sox series next week. So without further ado, I hope you have a good rest of your week, of course. And as always, go Mariners.